All right, everybody, here we are for episode 41. I'm Mike Kirkpatrick here with fellow host Wayne Yerke. Wayne, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Happy to be here. 41 weeks in a row.
Yep, it's been fantastic. A lot of fun. A couple things. Last week, I mentioned a bunch of recommendations, and I left off like, I don't know, 20 films. So these are more horror comedies I think people might enjoy. Attack the Block, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Burying the X, Deathgasm, fantastic Australian flick. Housebound, also fantastic Australian flick, which Housebound is on Tubi. Drag Me to Hell from Sam Raimi. Freaky, which is brand new. Vince Vaughn, fantastic. Gremlins, Monster Squad, the Leprechaun films, Severance, Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, one of my favorites, and Tragedy Girls. So there's some more recommendations for you if you listened to last week's episode and you enjoyed it. Here's some more to dig into. Lots of good ones there. Wayne, this week we also saw two trailers released for the new Suicide Squad movie, which I think looks pretty damn epic. I don't know if you got a chance to watch those, but it looks pretty killer.
More important trailer that I was excited about, sir, that starred one Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, the brand new, the final trailer for Black Widow, setting up the first Marvel movie in 2 years, basically. Coming out in July now, as we talked about. Very excited about this movie. Obviously, that'll be one that Wayne and I try to get to the theaters to go watch any way that we can, whether it be drive-in or the actual theaters by then. We'll see. And then the other one, of course, that I think, you know, had that buzz around it, but from people from our generation, it was a bit negative buzz. And, you know, the younger kids are probably very positive about it, is Space Jam, A New Legacy, starring the one and only King James.
And
a movie we will obviously be reviewing because it is part of Warner Brothers' at-home release on HBO Max and in theaters same day. So we'll obviously get to talk about it, but the trailer came out, people not happy about the CGI animation that it looks like they're going for over the regular drawn cartoon animation, which it starts out as, but you can see in the trailer it switches to the CGI look. I think when LeBron turns back to himself, because at first he's the animated LeBron, and then when he turns back to himself, Bugs Bunny starts to change and stuff. So we'll see how the final product looks.
At least it's not just a complete remake of the original Space
yes.
Jam. It has to be something different. As long as LeBron gives as good an acting performance as Michael did, which wasn't great. But
here's the thing I'll say, and Bulls fans and Jordan fans will probably come at me for this. Michael Jordan's a terrible actor. LeBron James, this will be his second movie, and he did good in his first movie, which was Trainwreck. Now, granted, both times he's playing himself, but I thought in Trainwreck he was actually very funny and very witty. And I was like, wow, he can kind of hold his own against actual actors. Now, this will be more difficult because this is against animation, which if you watch movies, everybody should know that acting against cartoon characters is not for everybody. You see people do it. Some are really good at it. Some are terrible at it. So it's interesting for him in his second movie out to kind of do that type of a role. But, you know, for what it is, I'm interested to see the movie. The trailer I thought was fine. It looks like a kid's movie today. Someone brought up, it looked like a Ready Player One for Warner Brothers, which is kind of what it looks like.
And of course, along with the comparisons to the original movie, you've got the controversy over the rape skunk not being...
Yes.
Because I thought it was creepy back then, and obviously now really creepy, and I'm fine with him being excluded. You know, come on, there's things that you just don't need anymore. You know?
Yeah, again, we've talked about this several times. You learn, you move on, and you go forward. And that's what they did with Pepe Le Pew. I never even really thought of it until it was brought up, but Chappelle did something about it 10 years ago where he talked about how that skunk was pretty rapey. So it's been one of those things that's kind of been underneath the surface for a while. They just never addressed it until now. So he's gone.
I'm really shocked that people are still so offended by it. Like,
of course.
Get over it. Come on, guys. More important stuff to worry about.
Exactly.
Like, that we're going to right now.
All right, everybody. We're going to get right to our main topic. I'm not even going to hold on what we're going to review this week. We're going to review Godzilla versus Kong. This is a big week. We've been waiting for this week. Before we get to that, though, we're going to talk some monster movies because how could you review a movie like Godzilla vs. Kong and not talk about what came before? So I'm going to start. We're just going to kind of go through a few that I've picked, and Wayne will chime in when he's got something to say, obviously. And then we'll talk about the franchise as a whole as we get going. One of my favorite all-time monster movies is from 2006, and it's directed by now Academy Award-winning director Bong Joon-ho, who did Parasite, and it is called The Host. It is this movie about this monster who kidnaps this little girl and then her family, who does everything they can to fight against this monster to get her back. It is seriously one of the most emotional experiences I had watching a monster film ever. I remember, Wayne, to this day, when I sat down and watched this movie for the first time. I was still working at Blockbuster. I'd rented it. I had great reviews from this movie, so I'm like, all right, I want to see a fun monster movie. I shit you not, 50 minutes in, I'm like in tears, bawling over this freaking movie. It's how emotional this film is. And I was just like eating my pizza at home, like, hey, this is going to be a good time. And I was just a mess the rest of the day. This movie was so good. The story is great. The characters are so amazing. We're going to get into characters when we talk about the franchise that we're talking about today. And this one handles it so well. You actually care what happens to these people. And that so much that happens a lot in horror films and monster films. The people end up becoming disposable, and so you don't care about them. So the host has these characters that you want to see succeed at what they're doing, even though they're not necessarily great people, so they're down on their luck and stuff. It's such a great movie. I think people really need to seek this one out if you haven't seen it. Not going to give anything away, but it's a fantastic movie. If you love Bong Joon-ho, you love Parasite, check this one out, because it will kind of reinvigorate that, like, oh my god, that love of monster movies you have, because that's what it did to me. And ever since I saw this, I was just like, wow, this is that movie that I'm going to talk about every time someone's like, hey, you got any good monster movies? This is the one.
And just so everybody knows, I'm looking at IMDb. There's at least three movies called The Host. So yes. You want the 2006 film, just so everybody, is with it and doesn't make a mistake and waste your time when you don't get what you think you're getting.
Exactly. And that's a good, it's good to know, because there's a crappy one with Saoirse Ronan that was basically supposed to be like another Twilight type series, and that one's terrible. Don't watch that one. Watch the 2006 one. It is in Korean, so it does have subtitles. All right, so another one I want to talk about, Wayne, is from 2016, and we're going to stay in the very depressing monster movies, because that's kind of what gets me, I guess. A Monster Calls. People may remember this film, they may not. It didn't make a lot of money when it came out, but it did get really good reviews and stuff. It's J.A. Bayona, who did Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and The Impossible. And it is a movie about a kid whose mom is dying of cancer. And so right off the bat, it's sad and depressing. He creates this monster voiced by Liam Neeson that's like almost this big, like almost like tree-looking monster type thing that only he could see. And it's such an emotional roller coaster of a movie. And obviously with the cancer being at the center of it, and this kid trying to deal with the real world and what is happening and the trauma that he's experiencing. So he creates this outlet, which is this monster that helps him do it. And it's such a powerful film. It's really, really just great to watch. It looks amazing. The special effects are fantastic. It was supposed to be this big budget, big movie, but I think when people realized that it was very sad, that's why it didn't like make a lot of money, because people were like, I want to go to the theater to cry. But it is really, again, another one of my favorite monster movies of the last, 20 years or so. I mean, it's that good. It was on Netflix recently. I'm not sure if it still is, but if you can catch it there, definitely do it. If not, it's worth renting. It's worth buying, in my opinion, without seeing it, if you can get it, at a lesser cost. Wayne, have you seen this one?
I have not. I'm not familiar with this one.
Yeah.
It looks intriguing. I mean, I love me some Sigourney Weaver. So.
Yeah, it's got Sigourney Weaver, Felicity Jones, Toby Kebbell, Liam Neeson is the voice, as I said. Felicity Jones is his mother. Sigourney Weaver, I believe, is his grandmother, I think. Or works for the school, maybe. I can't remember. But it's just, it's such a good, good film. And
my question. does the monster have a very particular set of skills?
He does. He does. I didn't realize this, but Tom Holland, who was in The Impossible, directed by Bayona, actually was a stand-in for the monster during 1 week of filming. So that's an interesting little tidbit there. His career basically started with The Impossible for the most part. That was the biggest movie he was in before he got cast as Spider-Man. And that was, I think that movie was nominated for at least one Academy Award for something. An Impossible, another great movie, but not about a monster. It's about a tsunami. Sigourney Weaver is the grandma. That's what I thought. But it's a really good emotional flick. And it, like I said, if it's one of those ones I think people miss because it was around the holidays it came out and it didn't do very well. So it was kind of in and out of the theaters really quick. I remember I had to wait till it came out to rent it. And I was not disappointed. I'm checking right now just to see if it's still on. It is still on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, go check it out. It's the one with the giant tree monster on it. But it's not like Godzilla or anything. It's a fantasy about a kid trying to run from his emotions. So if you're ready for that on a Sunday, on this Easter Sunday, then go for it. If not, then maybe wait till a time where you're not as vulnerable, I guess. There are so many good monster movies to talk about. One that, you know, the other genre I think that kind of gets left behind when we think about like movies with Godzilla and stuff like that, big monsters, is the horror movie monsters. So I did want to talk about one called Depraved, which is directed by Larry Fessenden, who has made kind of his career out of doing horror, not remaking, but reimaginings of like Frankenstein and Dracula and stuff like that, and a very indie film style. And he has been very successful in the indie market of doing this. Depraved is one that came out in 2019, and it's basically his Frankenstein. So it's his. That's why I'm talking about it today, because Frankenstein's monster. It's a monster movie, and he similar story. Create the monster. The monster then like falls in love with the woman, and they can't control the monster. It's a modern day. It takes place in today's times. It's done very, very well. The acting is really good in it. It's a great indie Frankenstein movie, and I think people should check it out. It's on Hulu, or at least it was recently. Assuming it still is, and it's definitely worth your time to go check out. I really enjoyed that one. Again, that one's more of an indie film, but it's still really, really good.
And with one, just get your thoughts. Maybe this isn't. How about 1985's Legend by Ridley Scott? Are you familiar with that one?
You know what? I actually haven't seen Legend, so you tell me. Is it a monster movie?
Well, you got what is perceived to be the devil. And
Tim Curry, right?
Yes. And, there's some real confusion because you're not really sure if he's actually portraying the Prince of Darkness or just a red horn dude. And, it's interesting. I haven't seen this one in a very, very long time, but the monster always stuck out because it scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
I got that big old pitchfork spear thing and, you know, just the horns and everything. And just, yeesh. But,
well, I mean, there's many...
Hold your dark arms about me. Protect me in your black embrace. Well, all right then. Yeah, I thought it was worth a mention. I want to jump in and contribute something.
Oh, no, for sure, for sure. Other ones to recommend, too?
I am not the most bravest of sorts when it comes to horror movies.
Yes, of course, yes. Other good ones to mention, though, The Meg recently, Rampage, Crawl is a good one. The Void. The Void's a good horror film, monster movie, if you haven't seen that one. Again, we've talked about Stephen Konstansky quite a bit on the show already, and I'm pretty sure Wayne has no idea who he is, but I think we've mentioned him like 4 or 5 weeks in a row now. The Void, a great movie. He did Manborg, Wayne. Remember, that's the one we talked about him on.
Oh, great movie.
Yes.
Love it. I want more.
Man. Hellboy had some great monster stuff in it. Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim's another one that's very much always compared to something like Godzilla. I really like Pacific Rim, the first one. Second one was okay. I really like the first one. It's really good. It's Guillermo del Toro's kind of Godzilla. He's another director that has like these other movies that he makes that are like the old ones he used to watch, like the Shape of Water, which is his like, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon. So this is another one that's like his Godzilla movie, and I thought it was awesome. I loved Pacific Rim the moment I saw it. It's got a great cast: Charlie Hunnam, Idris Elba, a bunch of other people are in it, and it's just really fun to watch. So if you haven't seen Pacific Rim, that's one I really recommend. Cloverfield, we didn't really talk about that one at all. I'm not a huge fan of Cloverfield. People love that movie, so if that's your thing, go watch that one. I still haven't seen Love and Monsters. No such thing as a good drama about a woman who finds a monster like living alone on an island. It's weird, very weird, but interesting. So there's lots of good ones out there to choose from. You know, Clash of the Titans, obviously the original King Kong movies. Spring is a really good one too, for Moorhead and Benson a couple years back. Let's see, anything else worth mentioning? Beowulf, if you like that kind of stuff. Babadook, he's on this list for some reason. He's a monster, I guess. Any of the Frankenstein stuff, obviously. Digging Up the Marrow from Adam Green is another really good one. That's like a mockumentary. The Thing. Oh, how could I not talk about The Thing? The Thing from John Carpenter. One of my favorite horror films. Great alien monster. Just fantastic. Sorry, Wynn, what were you saying?
I was trying to think. 82?
82, yeah, 1982. John Carpenter is The Thing. I mean, he's one of my favorite directors. People know that. So this is a movie that has stuck with me for a long time, ever since I've seen it. I've honestly only seen it probably like two or three times, but it's that good that I just remember that much from it. And obviously, the great bearded Kurt Russell is fantastic in this movie, as is Wilford Brimley is in this film as well, and some other great character actors pop up in here. Keith David is also in this, and he is fantastic as one of the main characters. Just a great, great monster movie. If you like your monster movies that take place in like the Antarctic or in the very cold places, this is for you. The remake or the prequel that they made was okay. I didn't love it, but it was all right.
Funny story I have about this one. In high school, we decided to have an impromptu Halloween movie night. And so obviously we made the trek over to Blockbuster, and obviously everything's rented out. So, you know, getting flack from like my then girlfriend at the time, just, you know, you gotta get something good and scary and everything. So I grabbed The Thing because there was a copy left, and you know, they're like, "This looks stupid. What is this?" No joke, terrified everybody in the room. I was victorious in my attempt to find a horror movie last minute, and The Thing did not disappoint.
Yes, it is probably one of the most classic horror monster movies that's ever been made. People really need to watch that one if they haven't seen it. And we'll end our non-Godzilla films with that one. We're going to move on into the 2014 film Godzilla, directed by Gareth Evans, and starting the franchise that we now have with Kong, Skull Island, Godzilla King of Monsters, and Godzilla vs. Kong. So, in 2014, they released Godzilla, starring Elizabeth Olsen, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Bryan Cranston, Ken Watanabe, Sally Hawkins, Juliette Binoche, David Strathairn. Directed by Gareth Evans, who had kind of made his name for himself as being an indie filmmaker, getting finally his first big-budget movie. Now, this movie, I watched all these this week, so I just watched this one again. And every time I watch this movie, I like it a little bit less. Now, that may surprise people, because I like a lot of movies. This was a movie when it came out, I think it was a year after Pacific Rim, or it might have been even the same year. And so I was already on the high of seeing Pacific Rim. I really loved that movie. And this movie just did not live up to the hype that I was hearing from friends and family that had seen it. And yesterday I kind of figured out what it was, because a lot of people that talk about this movie, because the big thing about Godzilla 2014 is that you don't see Godzilla till about 50 minutes in. So that makes a lot of people upset. Now, I'm not usually one of those people. If it's done properly, I don't care when I see the character, as long as it's done right. And the Godzilla sequences in Godzilla 2014 are actually really good. They're done really well. The effects are great. My issues lie in the characters, Wayne. And I like the actors. I like Bryan Cranston. I like Aaron Taylor-Johnson. I like Elizabeth Olsen. I don't care about any of them in this movie. And they're the majority of the film. You have to watch these characters. And when you're watching a group of characters that you're supposed to care about that are leading the film about a giant monster, you should care about them. And I could care less if they lived or died. I was like, you know what? And I realized that this on this viewing that that's why I didn't like this one that much. And it even made me angry. So they're having this great Godzilla versus Mutu fight, which is what they call those the creatures in the first movie. And they literally cut away to a shot of Aaron Taylor-Johnson in the middle of the fight, sitting in a helicopter waiting to jump out of the helicopter. Which was a cool scene when they finally jumped out of the helicopter, but I didn't need to see a minute and a half before they jumped out of the helicopter. I could have stayed with the Godzilla fight and then gone to them just haloing out of the sky and falling. It didn't work for me in a lot of ways. I do give it credit for setting up the franchise, which I do like the franchise. It's a shame for me that the first one of the franchise is my least favorite. I know a lot of people feel differently. I didn't buy into the characters enough or care enough to really warrant 50 minutes without Godzilla. Like, it wasn't good enough for me to be like, oh man, I really want to know what happens to this guy. And then the fact that he's like a death magnet. Like, every time he goes somewhere, everybody dies but him. and then you have Bryan Cranston. Spoiler, everybody, if you haven't seen 2014 Godzilla, skip past this part. Bryan Cranston's character dies about 30 minutes in, if that. And they kind of set up that he's supposed to be like the Sam Neill to this universe as Sam Neill was to Jurassic Park. And they kill him so quickly that you don't even get any of that. And that's the other thing. They kill him so quickly, you don't care. You're just like, oh, well, I never got to know him anyway, so that sucks. I guess Bryan Cranston's dead now. I remember his name. So, like, it's just...
the one who knocks?
Huh?
Is he still the one who knocks?
Yes. Yes, he is. Heisenberg did not make it very long in this movie. And it just... It just wasn't what I wanted it to be. And, I hate, because I'll criticize and people, you just didn't like it because you didn't see the monster early enough. It's like, no, there's plenty of movies I've seen where the monster shows up later and I enjoy. Jaws being one of them, and Jaws didn't do it on purpose. That's what I want also people to understand. When they're like, oh, it's like Jaws because you don't see the monster later. That was an accident. The shark freaking broke, people. They had no choice but to do that. So stop trying to say like, oh, well, they just followed the formula to Jaws. Jaws did it by mistake. Gareth Evans wanted to do it on purpose, and that's fine. These characters were not good enough for me to even care about. And especially, they never brought him back in any of the other movies. So obviously, the franchise didn't care about him either. Because Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen do not return. So I'll get off my high horse. I'll let Wayne talk about this one. Wayne, what are your thoughts on 2014 Godzilla? And don't let me deter you from liking it if you did like it.
I liked it for what it was, a lot of action, a lot of destruction, but I agree, you know, if you're going to make the ones, you're not going to have the monster show up for, you know, almost an hour, you've got to develop likable characters and have the people care about them, and it's like, what's Michelle Tanner doing running around the city? that's how it's good for leaving on for background noise, or just to have something when you're focusing on something else and, you know, you want to look up a case study, it's like, oh, that's cool. But as far as caring about it, you know,
Yeah.
Never biggest Godzilla fan to begin with, so.
Okay. So, well, and that's the thing, like, you know, and neither was I, like, I haven't seen all the originals or whatever. Obviously, I like Godzilla to an extent. You know, and I'm glad they kind of washed over the stench of the 98 one with Matthew Broderick, because we didn't need that one in our that one to be our only remembrance of Godzilla.
Is that the one where Godzilla looks really weird?
He looks like he basically looks like a character from Jurassic Park, essentially. He looks like a dinosaur. It's strange.
Yes.
Very strange. More lizard-like, where instead of in Godzilla, he's supposed to he walks like a human almost and stuff. So it's a little different. And I was glad to see this Godzilla back. And don't get me wrong, like I said, a lot of the stuff towards the end of this movie I thought were really cool. The effects were really cool. It just didn't work for me all the way through. I know that's not a popular opinion. That just seems to be how I feel about this movie. Like I said, I've seen it probably 3 times now, because I watched it before we took Donovan to see King of Monsters 2 years ago. And I had the same feeling then. I was like, wow, I'm just like not into this one as much. So that brings us to the next one, which the next one was not Godzilla. It was Kong Skull Island, which I again watched yesterday, or this week at least. Not yesterday, but this week. And this is a movie where I actually like the more I see it. This is probably my second or third time watching it. And I actually like the characters in this movie. I like the fact that it's kind of witty and funny throughout. They bring that kind of Marvel sensibility to it, where it's, you know, in traumatic situations, people cracking jokes, which I think people always want to be like, oh, why is it going to be so funny? You know why? Because that's realistic. If we're in a traumatic situation, chances are, in order to bring levity to the situation, people are going to be making jokes, making sarcastic comments, because that's what we do to ease tension in human life. So when that stuff is in movies, it shouldn't bother us. It shouldn't be like, oh, it needs to be more like Zack Snyderverse, where everything's just really dark and ominous and everyone's just depressed all the time, and Martha. It doesn't need to be like that. And like I said, in most cases, I feel like we bring that comedy into real-life situations. Think about the pandemic. How many of us have made jokes about the pandemic through this? This is a pretty serious time. Over 500,000 people have lost their lives with this. But people, we crack jokes to get along, to move forward, to be able to talk about it without feeling depressed every damn time. So when they added that stuff into Kong Skull Island, I really paid attention to it yesterday, watching it immediately after watching Godzilla. And it really brought a lot more out of the characters than they did in Godzilla. It made me like them more. It made them easier to watch. Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson were a lot of fun in this movie. Samuel L. Jackson, of course, was the anger guy most of the time, but that was what he was. You could tell in the very beginning when he gets the order to, you know, he just wants kind of like bloodshed and stuff. He's kind of lost it, and it takes, you know, right after Vietnam, so he's just kind of supposed to be losing it. John Goodman is great in this as well. It's got a great young cast. John C. Reilly, God, that guy's a godsend. He saves most movies. This one, I won't say he saved this one, but this one he was fantastic in. He plays a guy. Wayne, we have to throw praise to this character because he plays a guy from Chicago. I know he plays a Cubs fan, but I think you could at least enjoy the fact that he's from Chicago and loves Chicago-style hot dogs. So,
indeed.
but yeah, it's a lot of fun. We get to see King Kong in the very like first 5 minutes of the movie. There isn't like any action. He appears to two of the characters in the beginning of the movie, which I thought was a cool way to start off. Like, hey, here's the monster right away. This is what he's going to look like. Kong is a character that has a lot of depth to him, I think, which is another thing I like about him. We kind of get to know Kong in Kong Skull Island, which is fun. And it's just, I don't know, I just thought it was a really fun movie. The music was kick-ass. It had lots of great character actors that I enjoy, and it was a lot of fun. Wayne, what are your thoughts on Kong Skull Island?
I have not seen it, to be honest.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
Have not. Again, like, you know, it's just one of those things that I meant to get around to see, but just never did. Yeah, so I don't really have a lot to talk about this specific one, this specific film. I'm looking at the cast right now, and the cast alone, I would, you know, wager that it's going to be pretty kick-ass.
Yes. It has the most Avengers in it out of all the movies in the franchise, which there's at least one Marvel actor in every movie, by the way, just in case people are wondering. I did the math.
Samuel L. Jackson and John Goodman alone is enough to make me go see it.
Yeah, they're really good together, too.
John C. Reilly, I mean, come on. The goofball, you know, slapstick that we know with Will Ferrell. It's like, John C. Reilly is actually a kick-ass actor when he wants to be
serious. Yeah, he's really good in this. He is a lot of the comic relief because he plays a guy that lands on the island in during World War II. And gets stuck there. And then when they come to the island, they find him. So he's kind of loopy and a little bit crazy when they meet him, because he's been on the island alone for like 28 years. It's a really, really good movie. I really like this movie. Like I said, the more I see it, the more I like it. I definitely recommending it. All four of these films that we're going to talk about are on HBO Max. They just added Godzilla, the 2014 one, so now all four of them are there. Let's move on to Godzilla, King of Monsters. And that came out in 2019, and it starred Millie Bobby Brown and Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, Bradley Whitford, Sally Hawkins, Charles Dance, Thomas Middleditch, Aisha Hines, O'Shea Jackson Jr., who is Ice Cube's son, David Strathairn, Ken Watanabe also return as the Sally Hawkins. I mentioned her already. Shang Ziyi plays two characters in this one. Directed by horror film director Michael Dougherty. So this is where we get into my, like, I love these guys' movies. Michael Dougherty did a movie called Trick or Treat that kind of got shelved years ago, but then when it got released, it instantly became a cult horror hit, and it's fantastic to see him get a movie like this. He did Krampus as well, but to get to do something like Godzilla King of Monsters had to be, I'm assuming, a dream come true to him, because this is such a big, big movie. We took Donovan to see this film 2 years ago, and he loved every minute of it. Instantly afterwards, he's like, yep, that's my second favorite movie behind Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And just so people don't go, oh my god, how could he like Fallen Kingdom the best? It's because there's a lot more dinosaurs in Fallen Kingdom, people. That's all my kid cares about, is the action and the explosions and the dinosaurs. And Godzilla King of Monsters, you get a lot of monster fighting, which is really badass. Now this one, similar to the first one, the character development is not great. The characters are mainly there to just push the plot along, which is okay, because this is the movie that I think Godzilla fans were waiting for. This is the one that we get to see Godzilla basically go around the planet and kick a monster ass. And that's what I wanted. That's what fans wanted. And it suffered in the human aspect of it, but it gave us a kick-ass movie that I think fans enjoyed a lot more than critics did. And it just was just fun to see Godzilla just go around lighting people up, all the cool special effects. It had some great emotional scenes with Ken Watanabe when he has to go into the radioactive chamber in the bottom of the ocean. I thought that was really emotional. So some characters I think that you do kind of care about a little bit. You know, Watanabe and Sally Hawkins, again, like I said, are from the original Godzilla movie, along with David Strathairn. So they keep trying to bring characters back if they can. I don't know. I really dug this film. And what did you think about this one?
I was happy to see all the monsters that Godzilla finally gets to fight. I mean, you got Mothra, you got Rodan, and you got the three-headed
King Ghidorah. Yep.
I wasn't going to say that right. I'm a little upset. I wanted to see 11 user powers, but you know, I figure, you know.
I know. You know. That's the one that I told my son. I go, you know, Kong Skull Island is the worst MCU movie because they have all these powers in there and they don't use any of them. And it's the same in this one. It's the worst episode of Stranger Things because she doesn't use her abilities once. So it just doesn't work out.
At best, maybe?
Maybe best. Also, the best episode of Friday Night Lights, I think, that I've seen. And that's a Kyle Chandler joke, if anyone is familiar with Kyle Chandler.
Billy Bob Thornton's not in this.
He's the original coach. Yeah, it's Billy Bob. It's a fun movie. It's definitely a leave your brain at the door, according to certain people, it makes it a little different than the first one. But it's a lot of fun. It's very entertaining. It's really cool just to see Godzilla with those lightning powers, honestly, for once, like in a big budget movie. And the lead up to it, the special effects, it looked really great. And I was really happy with it. Didn't really, like I said, yeah, if you harp on the story, sure. It's not a great script, but it's still a very fun movie and it's very enjoyable.
If you're coming to this film for story and character depth, movie and movies like this for the action, the destruction, and cool looking monsters.
Exactly. So yeah, it was really good. So that's our thoughts on that movie. If you haven't seen it, I mean, what have you been doing? I feel like a lot of people have seen it, especially gearing up for the new one. I know a buddy of mine had just watched it he hadn't watched it before. He watched it for the first time and he enjoyed it too. So it's a really fun flick. Check it out. Now we're going to get into our review
of the week.
And it is, as we mentioned, Godzilla versus Kong, probably aside from Black Widow, the most anticipated film of this year for anybody. And maybe there's a few other ones, the new Matrix and stuff like that. But this movie has got people pumped. The box office is starting to show it. First movie to like make double digits at the box office opening weekend in like a year or over a year now, probably. It killed overseas last weekend. It's killing here this weekend. So you could just tell that people wanted to see this movie, and a lot of them wanted to see it on the big screen. Now, having seen it on my small screen, which is a pretty big small screen, I do think it definitely deserves to be seen in the theater, but I'm still not ready to go back to the theaters yet. So, you know, and I hesitate to see something like this at the drive-in just because you want the picture quality to be as good and bright as you need it to be. And I haven't been to that drive-in yet, Wayne, so I'm not sure how it is, but, and it's just easier, honestly, for me to watch them at home. And I was able to watch it on my big screen with my surround sound, and it kicked ass that way-wise. It looked great. The sound quality is fantastic. So we get this movie. It's a sequel to Godzilla King of Monsters and Kong Skull Island. It brings back Millie Bobby Brown and Kyle Chandler from King of Monsters, and then it adds a bunch of new characters, Alexander Skarsgård, Rebecca, I think it's Rebecca Hall, right?
Yeah. Eileen Andrews' character.
Yes, I get confused with her and another actress. So I wanted to make sure that it's the right one. Directed by Adam Weingart, another horror film director. He did The Guest and You're Next, two of my favorite horror films of the last 10 years. So again, this is one of those where it's like, it's nice to see a guy who I like, who makes indie horror films, go on and like do good for himself. And I was really like happy when I saw his name appear on in the opening credits. I'm like, I felt so proud for him, even though he doesn't know who the hell I am and is never going to know who the hell I am. I felt proud as a fan of his just to see his name on a movie of this size. Stars Alexander Skarsgård, Millie Bobby Brown, Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Shun Ogari, Eliza Gonzalez, Julian Dennison, Lance Reddick, Kyle Chandler, and Demian Bashir. Lance Reddick is like a stretch. He's in like two scenes, but he's a good character actor from The Wire who's fun to watch.
When you walk through the garden, I'll watch your back. Sorry.
It's okay. Skarsgård is a good lead here, I think. He's the lead actor. We meet him probably about 10, 15 minutes into the movie, maybe 10 minutes. We meet Rebecca Hall's character first. So the plot here is that Godzilla is unknowingly attacking people, and they're not sure why. He attacks this Apex building, which is a new kind of like Skynet company, and no one knows why he attacked these people. Like 8 people died or whatever in the first attack, so everyone's confused. So they're trying to figure out a way to combat against Godzilla, and they're also trying to find Skarsgård's character is trying to find like the center of the earth, basically. So think like Journey of the Center of the Earth. And they think that's where all these monsters have come from. So they set out on a journey to use Kong to locate the center of the earth, even though they know that if they bring Kong away from Skull Island where he's being protected, Godzilla will probably try to hunt him down because he is an alpha, just like Godzilla. And there can only be one king. And that's what they think, anyway. And basically, that's the movie. That's it right there. And there's some stuff that we're not going to talk about because I don't want to spoil anything. When you've seen the trailers, you've seen some of this stuff. This movie, I like. While Wayne and I were talking pre-show about some of the actions of some of the characters, not necessarily adding up to much, I think the characters are more fun in this movie than they have been in Godzilla King of Monsters and in the first Godzilla movie. They're on par, I think, with the characters from Kong Skull Island. There's at least a couple of them that you care about. You care about this little girl who's a deaf girl who speaks with Kong. That definitely is someone that you care about, I think. We're fans of Millie Bobby Brown here at the show, so anytime she's on screen, it's fun to watch her act, just do her thing. We reviewed Enola Holmes a couple weeks back on the show, or a few weeks back now. Months back on the show. Last year sometime. We're big fans of her, so to see her kind of lead her own sect of people, because she's with Julian Dennison and Brian Tyree Henry the whole time. So it's fun to kind of see that interaction. I like Brian Tyree Henry. He is on Atlanta. I have yet to watch that show, but he's also from Child's Play, the remake. He's a fun actor who I like to watch, and he was entertaining in this movie.
His character is really fun with just his...
He's a conspiracy nut who has a podcast. So it's kind of funny to watch that unfold. And Julian Dennison kind of plays the big wuss of the group. He's fun. He's a fun actor to watch, too. He was in Deadpool 2. He was in Christmas Chronicles 2. He's a sequel guy, apparently. Hunt for the Wilder People, which is a Taika Waititi film that he did before he did Thor Ragnarok. And he's the main character in that one. That was his like coming out party as an actor, and he was fantastic in it. See that if you haven't seen it. But yeah, Skarsgård's pretty good here too, as is Rebecca Hall. Demon Bashir plays that evil business lord who's just, you know, in every movie like this. That I'm going to save the world by, you know, destroying what everybody loves, and that's kind of how he wants to do it. And I'm also going to be filthy rich. Eliza Gonzalez plays his a-hole daughter, who runs the mission to the center of the earth.
Without giving anything away. Oh gosh, she was fun to hate.
Yeah, she was. She played it well. She's from Baby Driver. If people have seen that one, she's obviously been in other stuff too. She was just in I Care a Lot, the movie where you hate Rosamund Pike for the whole film. She plays her lover in that one. She's a good actress, but yeah, she played this part. I mean, you're supposed to hate her, and you do. And it's very easy to hate her in this movie. I thought it was a fun movie, Wayne. I had a really good time with it. Donovan, at the end of it, he was like, "Oh, did you like it?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I really liked it." And he's like, "I liked it too." And it was just great to see the action in the last hour of the movie. Because this does have probably about 40 minutes of setup, but like I said, I enjoyed this setup more than I did in the original Godzilla film. And then probably about 45 minutes in, you get their first fight, which is really, really fun and cool.
It was like, all right, it builds to it, and it comes at the perfect time for me. You're like, all right, yes, here's a little taste, a little preview.
Exactly. Oh, no, for sure. It really does. And it gets you amped up for the rest of the movie. And that last hour is just so kick-ass.
Comparison, though. The Batman-Superman comparison here, though. I got to. Because at one point, it seems like we're watching the same movie, and you're just waiting for one of the characters to go, Martha.
There is a point, obviously, and I think people can kind of figure it out, where it's going to kind of turn and... they're not going to be hating each other as much. Similar to Batman versus Superman. It wasn't really a movie meant to be only about them fighting. It's meant to be about something bigger. Yeah. Sorry, I needed a drink.
Maybe I'm just missing things I need to rewatch again, but there's a little bit of a backstory for Kong.
Kind of, yeah. They
movies, or is this just kind of something I need to rewatch and kind of pay more attention to?
I think just pay more attention. They talk about it more in this than they do in Kong Skull Island. They talk about it in that too, actually. John C. Reilly's character kind of gives a little bit of a backstory of what happened. But in this one, there's all those murals on the wall. Like the end of King of Monsters, they have a big mural that shows like Godzilla versus Kong on a wall somewhere. So this is just more fodder to give him a backstory to kind of get us to root for him more, because he's supposed to be more the vulnerable one, where Godzilla is this, you know, this giant beast that can't be stopped. So you kind of already have that developed love for Godzilla, I guess, from King of Monsters and Godzilla. So you're more like, why is he bad all of a sudden? Which, you start to realize what's going on. It's not a story that's trying to really trick people or anything. It's pretty...
He's just drawn that way.
Yes. Nice. I just had a lot of fun with it. That's all I can really say. It was a really entertaining film. The visuals were stunning. The colors in it were fantastic. I loved some of the final sequences. People saw Kong with the axe in the trailer. I'm telling you, man, that does not disappoint. I rewound it a few times to look at that first axe swing. I was like, oh my God, that's incredible.
I was waiting for a Power Ranger to appear and summon the Dragonzord and the Ultrazord with the little dragon flute.
Yes, and it's hard not to mention other movies when you watch this one. It reminded me of like the scenes in Batman or not Batman vs Superman, but Man of Steel, where he's like destroying the city, or in Avengers where they like save the world by destroying the city. There's a lot of that going on but it's more accepted in Godzilla vs. Kong, because they're monsters, and they don't know any better. They're just trying to stop the other thing trying to stop them. So buildings and people get murdered. Buildings get destroyed, people get murdered. It is a lot of fun to watch, though, and there are some really, really cool moments that you're just like, wow, that was really great and how they did that. And I can't even imagine helming something like this. Like, this is lots of man hours, lots of work went into this film. And it paid off, I think. I think it did a really great job.
Yes, absolutely. Just beautiful.
All right, so that's our thoughts, everybody. Obviously, you could tell we liked it. You could catch the whole Godzilla Kong franchise on HBO Max for the next 30 or so days. By the time this airs, it'll be about 20 days left for Godzilla versus Kong. It will eventually leave, and then it'll come back once it hits Blu-ray and stuff, and then goes the whole... a regular circle that it's going to hit.
If you're brave enough and you're vaccinated, go see this in the theater, though.
Yes.
It's definitely want to experience on the big screen. So I encourage you, if you can do it safely, to definitely check it out there.
Yes, it's one of those movies that I hope at some point they'll re-release it in theaters, just so that people could go see it on IMAX and whatnot and check it out. I think it'll be well worth your time to go see it again. Something like they're doing that with Tenet, too. They're putting that back in theaters so people can go see it. I think this one will do the same, just so they can get more people in the theaters to watch it. All right, we're going to move on to why this film, which is our new bad movie section. Awfully, it used to be awfully good, or just plain awful. This week's title is Monster Inspired, if you will. It's basically a ripoff of Jaws. It's called The Last Shark, or Great White, or many other titles. In other countries, it was a sequel to Jaws.
Lomito Squalo.
Yes.
I believe it was released in Spain.
It was Italy. It's Italy. Enzo Castellari. It stars James Franciscus, Vic Morrow, Michaela Pignatelli, and Joshua Sinclair. It is one of those movies where the actors all speak in their native language, and then they dub them over in English. That's just how they do it. And Vic Morrow has this like Scottish accent because he's basically playing Quint from Jaws. So it is fun to see how much they basically just stole Jaws. I believe in Japan, it was actually, because I think it came out after Jaws 2 came out, so it was actually Jaws 3. So they basically, that's just what they labeled him in those countries because they want people to go see it. They want their theaters to make money and whatnot. So they label them whatever they want.
Posters I read looking in this movie, they use the original Jaws artwork and the Jaws font. I was like, I'm sure the lawyers probably had some opportunities with this one to do some stuff. But...
It's different overseas. They're allowed to get, they were at least back then allowed to get away with it a little more. There's a lot of movies where this has happened to. There's a director, I forget his name, but he made a sequel to... Romero's dead movies called like Zombie 2, I think, or whatever, just because, and it was supposed to be like a sequel, but it had nothing to do with Romero's movies at all, but they just stole they're like, oh yeah, well, we called that one Zombie, so ours is Zombie 2, And that's just how they did it. So it's just one of those things in the 80s. That was the way to sell horror films overseas. I don't know why they wanted to do that, but I guess it helped them make money. So let's see. Plot. While windsurfing near the seaside community of Port Harbor, a young man is killed by a giant great white shark. Horror author Peter Benton and professional shark hunter Ron Hammer realize the truth, but ambitious Mayor William Wells refuses to accept that a shark threat exists. Now, I will give credit to this. William Wells, who's basically like the mayor in Jaws, does actually do something to protect. He puts the netting around. It's just not enough protection to stop the shark from getting through. And so at least I was like, well, at least he did that. Where the mayor and Jaws did absolutely nothing. So
I would point out the 5-minute long windsurfing scene to begin the film.
Yes. Yes.
I was shark this whole movie. I'm sorry. I was just, God, right, enough. You can be free.
It was, yeah, it was interesting for that to be the whole beginning of the film, because if the entire opening credits is that windsurfing, and the opening credits take some time to get through. They basically take, Vic Morrow basically combines Quint and Richard Dreyfuss's character into one character. So that is, so there's really two main characters here. And the other guy, instead of being a cop, is a novelist, which I thought was funny. I was like, what does a novelist know about catching a shark? Like, absolutely nothing is what you find out, because he's pretty terrible at it. It's a pretty bad movie from start to finish. Obviously, they made this movie to make money off of Jaws, because people like Jaws and they wanted a Jaws clone. There are plenty of them out there. Orca, the killer whale, is another one. There's plenty Jaws movies or Jaws ripoffs that are out there. Piranha. And this one is just another one in a long line. Like I said, I thought it would be a good one to add, just because we were talking about monster movies this week. And it's okay. It's not great. There are some entertaining moments. I did like some of the special effects. There's a scene where a guy gets his legs bitten off, which yeah. I thought was pretty cool.
That they, you know, for having a limited budget, that worked really, really well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It was kind of unbelievable that the shark brought down the helicopter, though. That whole part was like, wait, what? Like, they already, like, showed the guy get taken off the helicopter, which is, like, crazy enough. And then you're like, oh, okay, what's going to happen next? Well, the shark's going to take the helicopter into the water and murder the guy. I'm like, what? It was definitely really just a weird, weird thing to view.
Overall, how do you feel about the body count in this one?
You know, it was pretty good, I think. I'm trying to think.
I was rooting for the shark.
Yeah, of course, because you don't like any of the characters. It's a pretty high body count. I mean, that was, you know, I was disappointed we didn't get to see them all, because, like, in the spoiler, Vic Morrow's character does not make it. You really don't get to see him die. He just dies. And you're just like, oh, okay. And I do think the blowing up of the shark, again, spoilers, was really cool. I did like how it just, like, broke in half.
Yes.
That was kind of humorous.
Well, it's a metaphor for what it was feeling. It's a broken half, you know? It's like...
Apparently, too, they wanted to make more of them, but the robot shark broke during the movie, so they maybe they shouldn't have blown it up, and it would have been fun. So yeah, this one's on Amazon Prime if you guys are interested. Maybe if you want to get some buddies together when you can, on Zoom or something, have some beers, throw some back, and you can enjoy this for what it is. It's not a masterpiece by any stretch. There are some fun moments. There's some gory moments that are entertaining. The most of the story is, again, it is basically Jaws. It really doesn't hide the fact that it's almost a, like, step-by-step how to make Jaws on a small budget with less famous actors.
If you get through all the other Jaws movies and you still have some shark, you know, desires in you, there you go.
Throw it in there. Throw the last shark in there as a final nail in the coffin of the Jaws franchise, if you will. We did want to talk about Vic Morrow a little bit. He was a big actor back in the... like 60s and 70s. He had unfortunately passed away tragically in the 80s. We'll talk about that in a minute. But his career He had some really good movies that he was known for: Blackboard Jungle, Bad News Bears. He was on the Alfred Hitchcock Presents stuff. He was also the father of Jennifer Jason Leigh. They were apparently were estranged at the time of his death. He's on Bonanza, The Untouchables. I think Bad News Bears, though, is pretty much what most people, like, from our generation know him from, Wayne, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say, because I'm looking at all his other stuff, and I recognize things that he may have been on, but yeah, no, definitely the Bad News Bears is probably his most recognizable role.
Oh, he was in Roots, so he probably played a horrible racist.
That doesn't look like it's a stretch for his character.
Not to say he was a racist, we don't know him.
He's typically a bad guy or portrayed.
Yes, yeah, Charlie's Angels he was in. Yeah, Bad News Bears, he's an a-hole. So, I mean, it's, you know, he's one of the other coaches, right? Isn't that what he is?
Yes, he's the coach of the rival team. Of course, they're portrayed as the Yankees, so
yes. Everybody. So in 1983, he was on the set of Twilight Zone, the movie with John Landis. Two other kids were there with him. There was a fatal helicopter crash that it crashed. And it decapitated, unfortunately, Vic Morrow and one of the child actors, and then crushed the other actress, which is horrible. John Landis went to court over it. It was a big deal, big to-do in the 80s. And it's kind of been his memory, you know? It really is kind of what we have grown to know him from, is the fact that he passed away during the making of Twilight Zone, the movie.
It was done without the required permits.
There was a lot. That's why John Landis and a lot of the crew were brought to court, because they felt that there were a lot of things missing, paperwork and stuff that they did not have to do the scene. They were supposed to be running to the helicopter. It was taking place during Vietnam. Apparently, that story was supposed to be as a guy who traveled, who was a racist, who traveled through time as other people to kind of experience racism himself. And that was in Vietnam, and he was supposed to be getting on a helicopter and flying out, and the helicopter crashed. And I think they took that segment out of the movie, I believe. I haven't seen Twilight Zone, the movie, in quite some time, so I don't remember. But just a tragic moment. So we just wanted to throw, you know, a memory behind Vic Morrow and just talk about him just a little bit. You know, again, if you haven't seen Bad News Bears, check it out, because it's a hell of a funny movie. Walter Matthau, fantastic. Definitely worth your time to go see. So, yeah, rest in peace to Vic Morrow. The tragic, tragic time in film history. All right, so talk a little bit about what I've watched this week.
Before we go into that, I thought of a monster movie just now that I wanted to just talk about really quick. 2001, Jeepers Creepers. What are your thoughts on this one? Because this one was surprisingly good. And kind of scared the crap out of me, at least the first one.
So, okay, so we're going to talk about there's some controversy behind this, though. So the movie itself, this is why I don't talk about this movie that much, but we could talk about it. It's not terrible. I'm not a huge fan of it. As a horror fan, I wanna like this movie, because a lot of people do. And it just didn't do it for me. And I watched both of them. I didn't watch the third one, but I watched the first two. And I just wasn't a fan. Now, the controversy behind it is that the director, I won't mention his name, but is a known pedophile. And was actually found guilty of molesting a child on the set of one of his films, raping a child on the set of one of his films in the 80s. And somehow, no one knows how he like got let back in the door. He worked for Disney. He did Powder. And like people, like they claimed they had no idea. And then he created Jeepers Creepers, which a lot of people actually pointed out, kind of a metaphor for someone who maybe wants to like hurt children. So people were kind of like, well, I don't know. So there is that controversy. I don't want you not to like it, Wayne, because a lot of people still like this movie. You can separate. There is that ability to separate. He has been removed from the fourth movie. The company that released the last one, they bought the rights to it and they removed him from the film. And so there is that, which is good. How he was allowed to work so long, I have no idea. Usually you would think that would be something that would make people go like, hey, maybe we shouldn't work with this guy anymore. But that's why I don't talk about that movie very much. But
I'm aware of any of that, and I'm frankly ashamed that I brought it up, because that's just utterly...
It's disgusting. Okay. It's something, you know, it's... these things I think need to be talked about because people don't realize it, and it's in the film industry, and you know, these things at a time, I think things like this did kind of run rampant and people were not held accountable. And even like, again, like this guy served prison time for this and he still was able to get out and be like, hey, I've served my time. They're like, all right, sure. Now again, like I said, Disney claimed they had no idea. But obviously that means they just didn't do any research because you could have easily just looked it up. But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, people, is it art imitating life? You know, there are some things about that movie that kind of hint to some of the things that people think about this man. But that being said, a lot of people enjoy these films. And I didn't know that when I watched it the first time. I had no idea. So the first time I watched it, it just didn't do it for me. I don't know what it was. It was
the monster driving the
yeah, the, I guess it just was all kind of a bit cheesy, you know, and it just didn't really resonate with me at the time. And I bought the Blu-ray now this was after the fact that I knew. So I still bought the Blu-ray after the fact. You know, again, a lot of people worked on these movies, put their hard time in. You know, it sucks that this director has that, you know, did what he did. But there are other people that worked on these films. And it, you know, I kind of watched it for them. Like, all right, like maybe, you know, the actor did a good job playing the creeper, which he did. But I watched both of them and I just couldn't get into it, you know. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. It wasn't for me. Again, I like a lot of movies. People know that. That just originally, Jeepers Creepers was just not one that I cared for. I wanted to see the third one, but I even heard from fans of the first and second one that it wasn't very good, so I haven't watched it yet. I'm interested to see what they do with the next one, whether it's a sequel or a prequel. I'm not sure. Like I said, the fact he's no longer involved in it, so I think that'll probably make people a little happier as well, too. Maybe be willing to talk about that character a little bit more. But yeah, so that's that. That's Jeepers Creepers. All right. Stuff I watched this week. Words on the Bathroom Walls on Amazon Prime. It's directed by Thor Friedenthal. Let's see. It's a coming-of-age story about a young man who's trying to overcome schizophrenia. So it's very emotional, very raw. It's a very good movie. It is entertaining. There are some funny moments and stuff. They do kind of try to make you laugh a little bit in what is not a very funny topic, obviously. But they try to at least entertain people, I think, in the process of talking about this very serious mental illness. You can check that one on Amazon Prime. Part of my Oscar showcase, I watched the documentary My Octopus Teacher on Netflix. It's pretty good. I always like that kind of underwater stuff. It's about a guy who basically befriends an octopus. He's kind of going through like a midlife crisis and he decides to go to the same spot, that where he lives and swim there every day for over a year. And he befriends an octopus and the octopus starts to recognize him. So it's really kind of a cool documentary, and how that happens. It's kind of sad too at times. And then the one I really liked a lot, the best documentary was, Crip Camp, which is nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars. It's directed by James Lebrecht, who is actually one of the people in the film, and Nicole Noonham, who I believe is his wife. It is about the disabled revolution that took place like right after the civil rights movement took off. So I think it was kind of less talked about, but they did a lot of protesting in the 70s to get people to recognize them. This is actually, Wayne, this is where the 504 came from. They got people to vote on the 504, which is what you use in schools for kids with disabilities, which then eventually led to the IEP, which is what allows kids to have helpers and stuff in schools. People should know these rules. That's why I want people to watch this movie, because you should know these things when you have a child, because of how schools can be sometimes. I know just from my own experience, they had threatened to kick our son out of school because of some of these behaviors that he has had. And that's not something they legally can do, especially out of a public school. They denied it, of course, when I brought it up to the superintendent. Oh, I doubt she said that to you. I'm like, dude, she said it to me on the phone. Like, I heard her. I'm not an idiot. But it was just one of those things that they like to do that because then they don't have to deal with it. If you get scared and you take your kid out of school, then that's better for them because it's one less kid they have to deal with. It's a very interesting film because it goes through, like, they finally get the bill signed in, but then during Johnson, he finally reluctantly signs the bill. Jimmy Carter, sorry. Not the football coach. Jimmy Johnson, the football coach, had nothing to do with this. Jimmy Carter, the president, and his guy, who is a big part of the movie, were not wanting to sign this for the longest time. And they finally did, but then no one did anything about it. So this is basically it was supposed to be the law that put wheelchair ramps everywhere, handicap parking. So as early as as long ago as like the 80s, this stuff was not regularly available for handicapped people and people with illnesses. It wasn't until, and of course Reagan didn't do anything because he was a piece of shit. It wasn't until George H.W. Bush signed it into law and made it so everybody had to build ramps, build special doors, the bathroom stalls, all that stuff. And then out of that came the IEP so that kids don't get left behind because of their issues. So, I mean, it's a very powerful film. And I really think people should watch it, especially parents. It is emotional to watch. It is kind of hard to watch at times. Go ahead, Wayne.
What is the name of this film again, so everybody knows?
Crip Camp. So it's a Netflix original. So it's nominated for Best Picture, Best Feature Documentary at the Oscars this year. So I definitely recommend checking it out. Again, Crip Camp, 2020 film. It's on Netflix. Very good. It gives people a chance to tell their story, which is something I think that was definitely needed in this area. So just something really good that I watched. You got anything, Wayne, that you watched this week?
Not really. It was mainly just TV shows here and there. I'm still watching Cougar Town just because it's, you know, one of those you can just kind of laugh at the stupid things they do and not really think about it too much. Other than that, I watched a couple episodes of Forensic Files. It was a busy week for me, so I didn't really get a chance to watch much. And those are becoming more and more regular, and I don't like it. Relax and wind and watch some of cinema and television's best stuff that they got for us. And I missed it a little bit.
Yes, I agree. When I wasn't working, I got to watch a lot more stuff. However, we have to work to make money, right? Live.
Jobs.
Stupid jobs. All right, so news this week. Godzilla vs. Kong director Adam Wingard just landed his next two gigs. He'll be directing Thundercats for Warner Brothers. And then after that, he'll be doing a sequel to Face Off for Paramount. So him and his writing partner Simon Barrett, are going to work on both of those. Barrett has not worked with him since Blair Witch, but I know they're working on the Face-Off sequel. It'll be interesting because people were like, why are they going to remake that? And then they announced it shortly after it was going to be a sequel. They're talking about getting Cage and Travolta back. I believe Simon Barrett was the one on Twitter. He's like, think about it. He's like, when the Cage dies, you don't see his eyes close. It's like, so he could still technically be alive. So there is some thought to that of bringing both of them back. I'll be interested to see how that turns out. I love Face Off. They want to kind of make it a love letter to John Woo, it sounds like, so I'm really all about that.
Way you're good looking.
Travolta's so good in that movie. They're both great, but Travolta is really fantastic. Russell Crowe cast in Thor in an undisclosed role. Stallone developing a Rocky prequel series, so that'll be interesting.
I'm really excited about that.
I'm glad that he's a part of it. I'm wondering who they're going to get to play him. It'll probably be an unknown, I would imagine. But it'll definitely be interesting to see where they take it and where they start. Because obviously we kind of get him at the beginning of his career and the end of his career. So is it going to be more in the middle? Is it going to be him as a kid?
Well, Rocky's almost 30 in the first movie, isn't he?
Is he? All right. But it's still like the beginning of his boxing career, though. Like he's still, you know what I mean? Like he's not doing boxing at that point.
Well, he is. He's just an amateur.
Yeah.
As Mickey says, you're a bum. You think everybody I fought is a bum. Well, ain't I? And a spot on character portrayals in both imitations.
Yes, it was amazing. I felt like they were here with me. No, so it'll be interesting to see what route they go, if they're going to go, like, real young, or if they're going to go in between the movies, or what the whole story is going to be. I'm not exactly sure.
Right. You mentioned, not to jump back, but you mentioned Thundercat. Is that going to be an animated thing, or is that going to be, like, a actors in real life type thing?
I think they're going to probably do that, like, actors, CGI. I kind of hope they do, like, non-CGI, but just this day and age, you have to imagine that's probably what they would do.
Right.
I'm not quite sure. It just got announced, and I think off of Adam's success with Godzilla vs. Kong, that they wanted to capitalize. And I guess Simon Barrett, his writing partner, had said that it's something him and Adam had been talking about for years, that they would love to do a Thundercats movie. So we'll see how it is. I watched that show when I was a kid. I wasn't like a huge fan of Thundercats. I'm aware of it, so I know it exists. I know Lionel. Or Lionel, right? Whatever his name is.
Lionel.
Yeah, that guy, the lion guy. The cat guy. And
come on, how about that theme song, sir?
I don't remember the theme song, Wayne. What, you want to give us a little taste?
Oh, no, I can't do it justice. I refuse.
This next rumor I really hope is true is that the Foo Fighters are making a horror film with the director of Hatchet 3 that they shot during quarantine. I'm really excited about this. I hope it's true. Apparently, the rumor is that it is. It was done like a band session, and that like the house that they were working at was haunted. So I really hope that is what it is, because that would be awesome. That would, again, it would star the Foo Fighters, and Hatchet 3, directed by BJ McDonald, he would be helming that. And Adam Green created the Hatchet series. I don't know if he's involved at all, but it's just an interesting premise that could possibly one of those positive things that come out of quarantine. Let's see. Jack Rayner starring in the Peripheral series for Amazon from Westworld creators. Jordan Fisher joined CW's The Flash as Impulse as Bart Allen, future son to Barry and Iris. Donald Faison joins Powerpuff Girls live-action TV show for CW. Netflix closing in on a deal with Rian Johnson for two sequels to Knives Out. So that big movie that, you know, hit. People have been clamoring for sequels with Daniel Craig's character. Kind of like a Hercule Poirot from the Agatha Christie stories. You know, give him his own movie franchise. I'd be okay with that, because I thought he was great. Daniel Craig was fantastic in Knives Out, and that I love Knives Out, so I'm excited for that. Head of the Class, which is a show that I was all about back in the 80s, getting a reboot heading to HBO Max, so I'm looking forward to that. Movies coming out. Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard moved up to June 16th for summer theatrical release. Wrath of Man, starring Jason Statham, Josh Hartnett, Holt McCauley, Post Malone, in Guy Ritchie's new movie, comes out May 7th. Now, this Guy Ritchie had two new movies in the works. This is more of a Jason Statham actioner flick, where, you know, he's out for revenge. He does have another, like, gangster one that he's doing with Statham and Aubrey Plaza and Josh Hartnett, and Hugh Grant, which I'm excited about, because if you haven't seen The Gentleman, which was his last movie, it was fantastic. I really recommend it, and I'm excited to see what he does next. I like seeing Jason Statham punch people and shoot people, so I'm interested to see how Wrath of Man turns out. We'll see. Lucifer, Season 5, Part 2, coming May 28th. There is one more season after this of 10 episodes, so this is the kind of the swan song to the final, before the final season, I guess, if you will. And
It's one of mine and Miranda's favorite shows.
And so I still have yet to watch Part 1, so I'm going to have to go and watch Season 5, Part 1. Before May 28th, so that I can watch Part 2. Venom 2 has been pushed back to September 24th. Things Heard and Seen with Amanda Seyfried hits Netflix on April 29th. It's a new horror film. Death this week, Cleve Hall, who's a special effects artist of Reanimator and Demon Wind, passed away at 61. Rest in peace to him. So that's our show for this week, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. Everything Godzilla and monster related. We had a lot of fun, I think, watching this movie, Wayne, right? I mean, this was a fun week to kind of dive into the new movie. Sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. It was great.
So, you know, we recommend that you guys watch it, check it out, as everyone's been doing. You can follow us at Now Showing with Mike and Wayne on Facebook and Instagram. You can follow us on Twitter at Now _ Wayne. Email us at NowShowingWithMikeAndWayne@gmail.com. You can follow me at Twitter at WeAreScrewed2, at Instagram Mike1830, at Facebook at Michael Kirkpatrick. Follow Wayne at Wayne Yerke on Twitter and Facebook, and on Instagram at Wayne_Yerke. You can also find our episodes on Entertainment Buffet's YouTube page. Go check out all their stuff there. For Wayne Yerke, I am Mike Kirkpatrick. Thank you for listening to Now Showing with Mike and Wayne.